Welcome to episode 17 of the Cyber Guy Podcast. I'm your host, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Darren Mott. And in this episode, I'll discuss the threat that is China with retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Gary Gardner, who is the Chairman Emeritus of the InfraGuard National Board. But before we get to Gary and we talk about China, and you know the question is China, and the title of this podcast is China a threat? I'll give you the bottom line up front. It is a threat, and we'll kind of discuss historically why that is, why China does what they do, how they do what they do, and how they've done it the way they do it for many decades, quite frankly. So, but first, before I get to that, a couple news items of note. I was on a podcast this week called Retired Case File Review, and it is by a retired FBI agent, Jerry Williams, Jerry, J-E-R-R-I. She does a really nice job talking to retired agents and discussing cases that they have, and I talked about a very long-term undercover operation I did when I first joined the FBI in the early 2000s. Episode 4 of this podcast, I talked to the source that I had in that case, and I go into a little more detail on Jerry's case about that. So feel free to take a listen to that if you're so inclined. Again, it's FBI Retired Case File Review with Jerry Williams. You can find it on all your favorite podcast options. Another couple things, headlines I've noticed this week, it's been a busy week from a cyber perspective in headlines, is COVID-related scams and shopping scams are on the rise. Now, my last podcast with Scott Angabaum, we talked about shopping and how to protect yourself online, but since then, there have been a lot of reports of new methodologies that bad guys are using to try to get your information. And it's very similar to the way that Scott and I talked about how to protect yourself during that with being careful what you click on, being aware of what it is you're reading, things like that. Those haven't changed. But the COVID-19 issue is becoming a much larger issue because bad guys are using that to deploy ransomware, and they've kind of gone off the reservation in the sense that prior to this, it seemed like the ransomware groups weren't really targeting hospitals. Now they are. They don't really seem to care. My small hospital where I grew up in upstate New York, Potsdam Canton Hospital, got hit with ransomware. It was so bad that they couldn't even open locked doors within the hospital because it was all on the network, which was now locked up. The Huntsville City schools here in Huntsville were hit with ransomware. I don't believe they've got their network up yet. Not that I can tell. I haven't seen the news report that they have. And they even made it a point that the teachers were going old school last week and doing pen and paper. And so that has been certainly an issue. But there's a lot of misinformation being provided regarding the pandemic. There's a lot of fake news that's spreading. So you have to be careful especially with COVID information that you're getting on news sites or you're looking up information, because there is a lot of misinformation being provided that is leading bad guys to create conspiracy sites and conspiracy-related emails that people are going to want to click on and read because they are predisposed to believe whatever that conspiracy may be. Now, I'm not going to talk about those conspiracies, and I'm not going to discuss what my thoughts are on the vaccine or lockdowns or any of that, but you're going to see a lot of that information out there. And if you're interested in all of these things, and the news reporting is certainly lacking amongst the mainstream media, where you get real news is beyond me at this point, but you have to be careful where you're going, where you're looking. Make sure that as you're browsing the internet, you have pretty good antivirus and firewalls set up as best that you can. If you don't know how to do that, contact someone who does. Contact a friend, a neighbor, a relative that is an IT professional or at least understands it, can help you get set up for that. Because, you know, if I'm a bad guy, I'm going to create a lot of different information out there that is going to entice people to come to my site, which is going to result in information being stolen, ransomware being downloaded, all those kind of things. As you see ransomware news articles, you know, for the most part, the reason that ransomware deployed and the network got locked up was because someone within the company that got hit with the ransomware did something they weren't supposed to. Clicked on a link, opened a document in an email. There had to be some kind of human interaction that caused that ransomware to suddenly manipulate itself through the system and cause all those problems. So again, be aware of it, be on the lookout, be careful where you're looking and reading at things. If you're going on Facebook and reading things about the election, about the pandemic, just about shopping for Christmas, be leery of links that send you other places. I'm not saying they're all bad. You just have to be careful of. You have to understand the threats targeting you and assess the risk. Is it really, do I need to go to that site, or can I, do a news search and find legitimate news articles from Forbes,
New York Post, New York Times, wherever you like to get your news information, get it from a legitimate source and be questionable of other sites that you're looking at. So the other news article I want to talk about is FireEye was hacked this week. FireEye is a very large, very important cybersecurity company in the cybersecurity world. They do a lot of tracking of bad guys across all different sectors, against from criminals to nation-state actors in China, Russia, Iran, all that kind of. They're very good at what they do. They do a lot of good intelligence gathering, a lot of good dissemination of information. And they certainly sell products that help companies protect themselves. They do a lot of remediation when companies are the victim of cybercrime. Well, they themselves were a victim of a cybercrime this week. They had their system compromised and their red team tools stolen. What does that exactly mean for you? Well, now it means a bad guy is somewhere, and it looks like Russia did this one. At least the news I've seen, I have no inside information, but the open source stuff I've seen points to Russia as the culprit. Could be Russia, could be China, could be a combination of the two. Take your pick. But if we go with Russia, Russian hackers now have the FireEye red team tools, and these are specially designed software products that FireEye has designed to enable them to test networks and look for vulnerabilities across those networks and help companies determine where their holes are. And they do that with tools that look for vulnerabilities within networks, either known, unknown, new, zero day, take your pick. Well, these Russian individuals, or whoever this crime group was, likely a nation state that stole these red team tools, they now know those vulnerabilities. So they can use these tools to do bad things against good people. So I give FireEye a lot of credit for coming out and saying, here's what happened to us, here's what they stole. They were very transparent in it. And it goes a long way to show that if your company becomes the victim of a cyber incident, don't be afraid to report it to authorities or to your compliance agencies. Let people know what happened. It's not you're not going to get a scarlet letter put on your company that, ooh, they didn't have good cybersecurity. Anybody can get hit. This is not a cyber crime, and cyber attacks are not restricted to any one business group. Everybody is a victim. I saw another article this week. I was going to mention it, but I think I'm running out of time in this section, but that in 2021, there will be a cyber incident every 11 seconds. Now, I meant to do the math before I started. That's really good planning on my part, but that is a lot of cyber attacks in the next year. Every 11 seconds, there's going to be something happening somewhere to somebody. So the threats are out there. They're targeting us individually. They're targeting your company, whatever your company is. So educate your employees. I say this every time, and I mean it. Find ways to help your employees understand what the threats are targeting your company and targeting them individually. At least having an awareness of those threats can reduce your risk, because you're going to take extra precautions to not become a victim. So those are the news items for the week. I'm sure next week I'll have even more to talk about. Well, I want to welcome to the podcast Gary Gardner. Gary is a retired FBI supervisory special agent and the chairman emeritus of the InfraGuard National Board, which we'll talk about towards the end. But Gary, welcome to the show. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Darren. It's my pleasure to join you today and reminisce a little bit from our times past and move into what's really the hot topic of today, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as we get through this, it'll be interesting to see, because you spent 32 years in the FBI, and I think you retired in 99, which was when I came in. So then I spent 20. So for the last 52 years, we've got the gamut covered for 52 years worth of issues within the national security realm. So, and it'll be interesting to hear your take on what the Bureau was doing from a counterintelligence perspective when you started, to where you ended, to then when China came in. But we'll get all to that. So let's talk a little bit about your career background. I do this with everybody, but how'd you get in the FBI? What brought you to it? What'd you do beforehand? And where did you work?
Well, kind of an interesting start. I came right out of high school into the FBI as a clerk. I played sports when I was in high school, and in my senior year, I injured my knee playing football, and I had two tentative scholarships from the University of Cincinnati and Ball State. And when I injured my knee and couldn't no longer play reliably, then they withdrew those scholarships. And you know, or six of us in my family. So scholarships was going to be a big point of me getting to college and getting through college. Wanted to be an architect. And I was in scouting. And so one of our assistant scoutmasters was the local FBI agent in my community in Richmond, Indiana. And I got to know Joe really well. And so he kind of knew what my predicament was. And he said, "Hey, listen, would you ever think about coming into the FBI?" And I'm like, "Wow, no, me, FBI, I didn't know that I could." I watched the show. I was excited by the FBI. I thought, "Wow, this would be so cool." But I just hadn't thought about it for me. I started thinking about it and said, "Wow, this is pretty neat." And in those days, they had something called the one of the Justice Assistant Acts, and it allowed for students like myself to go to college. They would pay for my tuition. And when I graduated, if I contributed another 4 years into the criminal justice community, they would, you know, pay, and then they would wipe out my debt, if you will, for college. So that was like, wow, this is a great opportunity. So that's what I did. Went out to Washington, started working in what in those days was the Files and Communications Division, putting paper into paper files. One of the interesting things is I actually handled all the paper and files for the assassination of Martin Luther King.
So you were an original Hoover
guy. Which really intrigued me.
So you were a Hoover guy, yes.
J. Edgar Hoover was the director. That's right, when I came in. Yeah, got to meet him. So it was pretty cool. Yeah. And then I went into the service from there for a couple of years, went to Vietnam, came right back into the Bureau, went back into the Files and Communications Division, started doing some work there. And then they realized my background experience from the military. And I ended up going up to the Laboratory Division and working in the Firearms, Tool Marks, and Explosives Unit later. It got separated out into the explosives unit, and that's where I worked until I graduated college and then became a special agent.
And what did you work from an agent perspective? Where was your first assignment, and what did they designate you into? What role?
Well, in those days, you really got round robined in most offices. So my first office was Cincinnati, Ohio, which covered all of Southern Ohio. And I literally rotated about every 6 months to a different squad in the office. So I got to work all the different criminal, the white collar, violent crimes, counterintelligence, which was the Russians in those days for the most part, and their satellites. And it was really pretty cool because I literally in my first office probably worked almost all the violations that the FBI had in those days or touched them in some form or fashion, because in those days there were really tight controls upon you covering leads and reporting, right? And so as a young new agent, obviously I got a lot of the old dog cases that other guys had been working for a long time and hadn't solved. And then you also got a lot of leads, as you know, from other field offices. One office sends a lead to another office and say, "Hey, will you interview this person or will you conduct this investigation, get records, whatever." And it was the day I walked into my office, I had 70 cases waiting for me that had been assigned to me. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the way it was, you know, you had them and you had to do something on those cases every month.
Hell yeah.
So.
Were your file reviews, here's a question. So were your file reviews every month or every 3 months like they were when I was in?
No, they were about every 3 months, okay. I guess, that we did the file reviews. When I was on the reactive squad, they used to do a monthly file review, because in those days, all those cases required a report to headquarters. So, you know, they weren't necessarily lengthy, but you had to send something in. We used to call it post and coast, right?
Yeah, sure.
you put something in there, and you literally concentrated on the cases that were more significant, where you had a good chance of solving them, or at least there was evidence or information or people you could interview that would track you down the path toward a prosecution for the case, you know.
And now you retired out of headquarters, is that correct? That was your last posting was in
right.
headquarters. And what did you
that
do?
That was my, yeah.
What were you doing there?
Well, when I retired, I was running a program which I actually developed or oversaw the development of. It was called LEO, Law Enforcement Online. And it was an online capability, very similar to what AOL was in those days. Where it had, you know, email some ability for learning and, you know, documents were posted for people for informational purposes, things like that. There was a, you know, the ability to have like a chat room stations and stuff in those days. And it was just for the, you know, law enforcement community in those days. It's now morphed into something that's called the LEAP. Law Enforcement Information, Law Enforcement Enterprise Portal. And it's open to the entire criminal justice community, I think, nowadays. So,
all right. So let's move into our discussion here on China. So you and I had some communications on LinkedIn that kind of started us down this road for this podcast to talk about China. Because obviously, even though you've left the Bureau 20 years ago, you've still been involved with investigative matters and watching, you know, China rise as a power. And full disclosure, Gary's wife, Doris, was on the podcast a couple podcasts ago. She was my supervisor in Charlotte. And so you mentioned that you'd work counterintelligence, you know, through the 80s and 90s, and it was Russia primarily. So talk a little bit about that, just so we can give a background to how the Bureau deals with counterintelligence, what the role of that is, what you did, what was the focus on Russia? Was it the consulates and the embassies only? Was it all of their assets across the country? What was the Bureau's take on counterintelligence during your time?
Yeah, really all of those things. You know, as you mentioned a little bit ago, you know, I came in when J. Edgar Hoover was the director, and communism was a very significant focus of his. I mean, he wrote a couple books about it. You know, foreign counterintelligence was a big aspect of that. The Soviets at that time were doing a lot of things that you now see, you know, China doing short of the cyber. Okay. We didn't have those issues like we do today because we didn't have the communication infrastructure. So, you know, it was a lot of, you know, following people around. I can remember my very first exposure or case as an agent in Cincinnati was that I had to go out to Portsmouth and pick up two traveling military attachés for the Soviet Union that were assigned to D.C., and they were taking a trip across country. And so we were passing them off, office to office to office. So Pittsburgh passed them off to us in Portsmouth, Ohio. We followed them all the way through. They were staying in Cincinnati that night. And so it was a matter of, it was kind of like babysitting. They knew we were following them. It wasn't like, you know, something that you were surreptitiously doing. You know, they knew we were there. In fact, so much so that I got a good lesson early on in how these guys play as we were going across the, I think it's Route 52 in southern Ohio. It's a two-lane road, at least in those days. And there was a fair bit of traffic in and out. They knew we were following. So, you know, they would like, you know, the last minute, they would jump around a car. And if I'd pull out to try, here's an oncoming car. I'm not going to be able to get around, right? And there were two of us, two cars that were following them through there. But it was kind of an interesting exposure to that. And when they got into Cincinnati and we were there by the hotel that they stayed at, they got out and waved. So it was like they knew, and they went to the library in Cincinnati. And, you know, in those days, I'm kind of surprised because nowadays a big chunk of Cincinnati is an off-limits area for them because of General Electric. They make aircraft engines out there, right? So there are certain areas that are off-limits to registered diplomats, right?
Yep, sure.
Right. And they had sleepers back at, you know, in those days, it was a lot tougher to find them, and everything was through dead drops, okay, to pass information. I mean, as we get into our discussion today in China, I mean, it's almost a lost art in the physical sense, okay, but it's become a whole new world in the cyber sense. You know, with steganography and all that type of stuff to be able to pass information that other people potentially can't see or don't understand.
So looking back, was there even a focus on China at all during that time? Was there an awareness of the problem? How did the Bureau deal with China? Or did they even look at, or did they look at it more as a crime problem versus a espionage problem?
Yeah, I think probably Asian gangs were more of a concern than from a counterintelligence perspective. I won't say that they didn't, you know, pay attention. I'm sure there was some focus, particularly in San Francisco and New York, and maybe in you know, in Washington there and WFO. But beyond that, they just weren't as sophisticated in those days, I don't think. And they didn't present the threat they present today because they were not, you know, nothing near the power or the ability to exert that power around the world. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, in their backyard, obviously, they've always been a problem. I mentioned, you know, I was in Vietnam. I mean, they were very strong supporters of the Viet Cong, right? And with supplies and weaponry and things like that. But that's really in their backyard. Their ability to project that around the world only has come about, I would say, in the last, maybe 20 years, okay? More directly, maybe the last 10 or 15.
Right.
Where the their money has you know, them being the major manufacturer of many things worldwide, and that production and money has allowed them to extend themselves into different areas around the world where they've bought their way in, if you will, right?
Yep.
I mean, we know about, they've gone to ports. They own some of the most significant ports in the world. I mean, they went down to Vietnam and they said Vietnam was looking for a telecommunication system. And they went down to Vietnam and their bid was free. We'll give you a telecommunication system for free. Okay. And, you know, once they're in, And they set up all the infrastructure, then basically they own Vietnam's telecommunication system, right?
Yep.
Even if they want to pull out and they quit, I mean, the whole backbone to that system, they'd have to find somebody that would be willing to come in there and completely, you know, supplant that with their system.
Yeah,
and I think it's just not logical.
Yeah, I think the big difference between China and Russia is very quiet about what they do and why they want to do it. China is very open about why they're doing it and how they're going to do it. In 1999, two Chinese generals wrote a book called Unrestricted Warfare. And the only reason I know this is when I did my master's degree, I read it. It was part of a cyber espionage class. And they came right out and said, we're not going to win a physical war with the United States currently. So we're going to have to do all this other stuff to try to undermine the system. Yep. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. The news report today was that there was a nation state intrusion into the U.S. Treasury email system. They use Microsoft Office 365. That's how they got in. Now, my guess is that they were using multi-factor authentication and strong passwords, yet somehow someone didn't have the right security settings and an actor got in and has been monitoring that system for months. And this is their methodology. We've heard for 4 years, Russia, it's all Russia. Everybody's all Russia, horrible. But I mean, based on your knowledge of Russia, the Soviet Union to what became Russia, to what we know about China, is the press got too much? And I'm going to pick on the press here for a minute because they're worth picking on. But have they focused far too much on Russia's capability and ignored China's?
Yeah, and you know, I hate to say it, but I think some of that has been, you know, self-serving for them. But the truth of the matter is, if you know, we just discussed how China was, you know, 20 years ago, where they were mostly centric to their neighbors in Asia. Okay, well, it's interesting that that's where Russia's biggest threat largely lies today, is their neighbors over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, who have they invaded, right? Their neighbors. Okay. Their ability to project around the world is significantly limited compared to what the old Soviet Union was, right? And Putin knows this, okay? And technology in the form of, you know, the internet and the cyber world we live in today has given him this existential threat that can be projected around the world. He doesn't have to put a battleship next to somebody's front door to threaten them. You know, he can do it from sitting right there somewhere in Russia and project that threat through cyber means. Certainly China's doing that, but China has the ability of a two front, if you will, you know, where they're building up with the islands, right, in the South mm-hmm. China Sea, where they're able to grab land, okay? And what allows them to do that to a large extent is the money and revenue that's been generated. Obviously, the control over their people, you know, but versus Russia, who doesn't have that money, okay? So a lot of the targets for Russia have been along the criminal lines of money, if you will, right? They allow, as you well know, the criminal actors in their country to pursue theft around the world. And then they kick back to the Russians. That's how they're allowed to stay in business, if you will, and be protected. Whereas, you know, I don't see the money criminal motivation directly from the Chinese. I see the Chinese, like you said, they play the long game. And they are probably the best at data manipulation and analysis of anybody. People say to me, and probably you've had this question, why would the Chinese be stealing people's medical records?
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, and you talk to people in this country and they go, well, so what? They got so they know that I have diabetes. So they know that I have, you know, leukemia. So what? Okay. So what? The best example is what we see today, right? I mean, diabetes medication, the majority of it, like I think I read something where 82% of the diabetes medication is produced in China. So don't you think that would be relevant to figure out, well, how many of these people in the United States have diabetes? If we control the majority of the medication and then we cut it off, hey, what's the impact? Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we spin into COVID. Okay. I mean, COVID came out of China. Okay. You know, I think at this point, not having any other information, I think at this point it was, you know, it was an accident that he escaped the lab. I don't think they intended to do that when it did, but I think the whole purpose of them, having that in the lab was literally creating it and then try and find a vaccine, then let it release. And then they're the only guy in town that has the vaccine that can protect against it. Right?
Right.
I mean, and people go, you know, what are you? You keep reading James Bond or something? I said, no, you got to wake up. This is the real world. Well, I mean, we had a case here in Charlotte after you left, but I think you know about it, where it was a company that made some type of a filtration system that would fill their power plants to try and keep the bad elements that's produced when you're burning coal in these power plants, that filtration capability. Hey, they stole this guy's whole product to the point that then they turned around and built it, marketed it. The guy was out of business.
Yep.
Because they undercut him. I mean, he couldn't afford it, you know. And that was an individual who had been encouraged by the Chinese to do this and told that he could bring it back home and produce it and sell it. And they would actually support him, you know, monetarily. And I mean, that's like one out of hundreds, mm-hmm. thousands, probably.
Well, we had
They're
a case
sitting all around this country.
Yeah. We had a case here in Birmingham before I got here. But they told me about it when we got here, cause they couldn't, I really didn't even do an investigation cause they just didn't have the evidence. Cause for every one of those cases you mentioned, there's 10 that there's no evidence to do anything with them. But there was a company here that just did copper tubing. They did copper tubing. That's what they did. Their thing was copper tubing. And so they had a 500-employee company. They were doing great. A delegation from China said, hey, we'd like to come and see how it is you do what you do, because I think that would be valuable to us. So they came in, and they probably showed them more than they needed to show them, because they didn't. Again, most companies don't think, A, I have anything anyone would want, and why do I have to worry about China? I'm a copper tubing company.
Yes.
The Chinese created a alternative company in South Alabama that undercut this company in North Alabama and essentially ran the North Alabama country out of business, or company out of business.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. You and I both know, you know, I probably 100 different cases out there. And since being an InfraGuard, I hear a lot more, from, you know, different victims. I think we spun off a little bit. I want to go back to the medical thing, because it's been a tremendous, effort to get hack into, and steal information. And, I think that people just generally go, well, that's what's this, no real big deal. They don't draw the correlation. They don't draw the correlation with the guy doing copper, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just copper piping, like you said, right?
Yep.
I mean, hey, we don't even use copper piping anymore. Well, we do in a lot of areas, but it's not in your home anymore that we do that, right?
Yep.
So it's one of those things that the average American doesn't realize the depth or degree of sophistication that these guys use. And you know what? It's like, if I fail today, no big deal. I'll just keep trying. It's not like they have a timeline that they have to succeed in getting X by, you know, the end of this year. Okay. They're going to keep trying until they get it. And sooner or later, unfortunately, you know, they'll get it. You know, we can't even protect a lot of the stuff that has, you know, top secret stuff that has a significant amount of effort and oversight. And you think about the things that are out there that don't have near that type of security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about China, but I just read something about this week about Russia is now targeting home computers because everybody's sitting at home on their computer working nowadays instead of going into the office. I mean, it's just, it just continues, you know, to flow. And so how many of those people sitting at home that don't have their resources from their office looking at their systems internally,
mm-hmm.
you know, how many of those people are really coming in through a VPN or tunneling in through some type of firewall, right? When they're in the office, they are. But now that they're at home, and some of these people had to do this. You know, I was talking to a guy in a company, and he goes, oh, my golly. He said, and there's like somewhere between 500 and 600 employees. And he said, oh, my God, I got to help all these people set up these systems for home because they have to get into our database or they can't really do their job. But we didn't have security set up to do that because there was no need to do that except in the office.
Right. Well, think about it this way. Think so you've got all these people working. Let's say they are VPNing in their network. That's great. But let's say their computer is compromised at home. What's the VPN do for you? If I'm a bad guy, I'm sitting there and I'm watching your system, VPN all you like, because I'm just going to watch what you're doing what I get. So it's just creates this whole new pathway in. And you mentioned the health stuff earlier, yeah. and I didn't think about it from that perspective. I always think about it from a counterintelligence perspective and trying to make someone vulnerable. But you take the medical information, take the Equifax information, which we know is China, and OPM, which we know is China.
Yes.
And let's take even Marriott. Yeah. I don't know who did Marriott, but let's say China did Marriott too, just for kicks and giggles. So now I know from OPM, everybody who has a clearance in the United States. From Equifax, I know what their debt problems are. From Blue Cross Blue Shield, I know if they have diabetes or some other health problem. And from Marriott, I know where they're traveling on vacation. If I can find John at Raytheon, and he's got $100,000 in medical debt, I can find him at the Marriott in Bermuda, approach him and offer him $200,000.
Exactly.
And that is where the Chinese are different than Russia, because Russia doesn't think that deeply. Totally. They don't go that deeply into it. They don't care that much. They're carried about their hegemony locally, like you said.
Well,
and China's looking to expand it out.
Yeah, you take the gal that was arrested up in from Huawei, arrested up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when it became apparent that the Canadians weren't going to release her right away, what did they do? They went out and grabbed two Canadians.
Right. Yep.
Now, did they just grab any two Canadians they could find? No. I don't believe that. They grabbed two that they felt were significant enough that it would ensure that the Canadians would release the person they wanted back, the woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't happened so far. But, hey, you know, the more data they have and the more they can manipulate it. So, you know, you and I, for all these years, every 5 years, we filled out, you know, mm-hmm. our security forms, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know all the data that gets put on those things, right? Mm-hmm. And all of our families,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, let's say that, you know, at some point in time, you know, one of our family members were traveling over there in one of these countries. And that, you know, before we retired, then let's just guess that maybe one of us worked something that was very serious with one of those people, and we took down somebody, okay? And now we've got a family member that's traveling over there.
Mm-hmm.
They can tie all these pieces together.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? And then maybe leverage or use that person, you know, who was your source when you took that guy down? Well, I'm not going to tell you. Well, now, you know, you've got a family member sitting over there.
Right, right.
You know, you might be willing, you're retired, this is gone, but you might be willing to give that up. That's their mindset. That's what they're thinking about. So nothing they do is an accident. I guess that's an important point that we're saying today. There, they don't just shotgun for the sake of shotgunning. Right. I mean, they're very pointed in exactly what they're looking for. And then they aggregate all these pieces together. Like I traveled over there after I retired, representing, actually was doing some work consulting with Sun Microsystems. And, I'll never forget going in and meeting with the, Ministry of Security over there.
Good times.
And they had no idea. I mean, they say they had no idea. They, in their mind, I had not retired because in their world, people don't, you don't leave the job. Right. So, you know, my room was tossed. I was watched everywhere. I went over there and, you know, and I'd retired.
And at the time, though, your wife was still in the bureau, right? Doris was still in the FBI, right?
She was.
Yeah. So
she was. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You were definitely retired. Well, think about it this way. Right. So I've mentioned TikTok on previous podcasts. I'm going to reiterate over here, but from a data gathering perspective, this is fantastic for them for the future, because how many of these teenage kids or even these 20-year-old folks using TikTok and doing whatever they're doing on TikTok, I mean, there's, you know, legitimate social media use for it, but they're gathering all of that metadata on facial recognition and stuff like that. So in 10 years, some of those people end up becoming covert officers for the military, DOD, CIA, NSA, take your pick, traveling in a covert capacity into that country. They're screwed because they're going to know who they really are from when they were kids.
But,
But again, that's part of their long game.
And here's another, currently, you know, I had a client that traveled over and, you know, was amazed at what his adversary seemed to know about him. Okay. And he goes, I don't use social media. I'm not on any of that stuff. Okay. And so I did a little digging around. Okay. Well, his wife put on Facebook about her husband traveling to China, and she hoped he would pick up this or that, right? While he was over there. Okay. He had a daughter in college that mentioned it, okay, on her Instagram, okay, about dad going to China. And this was before he ever left.
Of course.
So it's not just you, but it's those elements around you, your family, your friends, okay, that they're picking up and correlating this chatter. It's like we had business people that would go over there and take their own aircraft, okay, right? And then they wonder how the Chinese knew all the discussions that occurred on the way home. Well, they put devices on
the plane.
Yes, because they were sitting there, right? Nobody guarded them 24/7. They're sitting in a Chinese airport, right? The pilots went to the hotel, you know. So that's the links that these people go. Unfortunately, we don't view those things the same way here.
Right.
And that's why, you know, you mentioned, you know, you and I and some things that we've been doing on LinkedIn and putting out there and messages of trying to get out to, you know, InfraGuard members. I mean, even when you were in the Bureau, look, you know, when I retired, you didn't talk about, you didn't attribute things.
Right.
The foreign actors, even in my day, you know, the Bureau didn't come out and say Russia, okay, or Soviet Union, right? And I can think about, you know, when Doris, you know, had the desk down there and all the time that we knew China was doing some of these things, and the Bureau would never say China, right? Well, boy, have things changed.
Right.
I mean, look at Director Ray. I mean, there's almost a week doesn't go by that he's saying something about the threat posed by China. And I don't think people can, you know, that haven't experienced what we've experienced, the insiders, I don't think they get the significance of that. I mean, for the FBI director to come out and make these kind of statements, this is a very serious problem.
Or for the Department of Justice, or for the Department of Justice to indict actual Chinese military members.
Yes, exactly.
So you mentioned InfraGuard. No. So let's talk InfraGuard for a second. So, I mean, I'm an InfraGuard member here in Huntsville, and I get a lot of stuff from our InfraGuard guy on almost on a daily basis regarding all sorts of different threats. And they mentioned China, Russia, stuff like that. So what is InfraGuard doing, or is InfraGuard working actively to try to – how are they working to help educate their members and people that they want to be members as to what these threats are? Is there a – is there a directed focus to that? Do they recognize the role they can play? How is that kind of all working?
Yeah, it's kind of yes and no. It's still somewhat of an uphill battle in some areas because InfraGuard is all about information sharing and education. So it's trying to get the information out there. And as you know, as a member, the FBI puts out a daily blast to all InfraGuard members with a lot of the information even that we've been talking about here to try and keep them informed of the threat and of the tools and techniques that are being used by these threat actors out there. And then we've tried to put together education programs. We just released something we called NISRU, the National Infrastructure Security and Resilience University. Where the purpose of that is to have courses that are not just theory, but they're practical applications within the various sectors that address both cyber and physical threats to help people be better prepared to deal with them. The idea is that it would serve as skill enhancement on one end and workforce development on the other end. Because that's our best tool is awareness. If you can make people aware of the threat, but it's like you talk about critical infrastructures. When we talk about, it's not something I can put my hands on. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. You talk about hacking and stuff. I mean, listen, if the Chinese had done to us what Osama did with 9/11, we'd already be at war with them. Okay? Right?
Yep.
I contend that what they've been doing over the last several years is magnitudes worse than 9/11. The difference is you can't put your hand, touch it, feel it. It's not like I don't see the building in a rubble.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't see the caskets moving. Okay. But let there be no doubt in their mind. They're at war with us. It's just not, something that everybody has out there as a declared war. And we have to wake up and realize this, or, our grandchildren are going to be speaking Mandarin. Look at the Uyghurs. Okay. What would they do if they were able to take over different parts, of the world? Just look at the Uyghurs. If you want to see what, they're trying to brainwash them. They're trying to reprogram them into their sphere, and it's not something that I totally blame the Chinese people. It's the Chinese Communist Party.
Right.
Okay. And they have absolute total control over there. And I think, look what's happened with Hong Kong and Taiwan's, right, is going to be behind that.
Yep.
Because who's going to stand up over this little island, right?
Right.
Over that. Why is Putin doing the things he's doing today in these little areas? Because you sit there and you go, well, the man has nuclear weapons. I mean, he could lie. Yeah. But you know what? He's not crazy.
Right.
He knows what there's that mutual understanding, even with, China, right?
Mm-hmm.
China, they know, you know, it's mutual destruction.
Right.
So, you know, that's why cyber's become, you know, the nuclear weapon of choice, yep. if you will, today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I certainly hope we're hurting them and we just don't know it as bad as they're hurting us. But when you think about it, what are we stealing from them?
Right.
Stealing our own technology back.
Yeah, exactly.
If you will.
Yeah, I think the best thing.
You've seen their aircraft carrier, which looks an awful lot like right. our aircraft carrier.
Oh, I have pictures. Yeah. I do in presentations that I have the U.S. version of a device and the Chinese version, and they look exactly the same. There's this Northrop yes. Grumman unmanned air, exactly. Unmanned air vehicle that the U.S. version has yeah. has a window at the front. And I asked Northrop Grumman, why is there a right. window in an unmanned vehicle? And they said, well, because when we were testing it, we had to yeah. Someone had to sit in there to test drive it. Well, the Chinese version has a window as well. I don't think they knew about the pilot, but they had the window. So,
yes.
Well, Gary, I'll give yeah. you the last word here. Where do you think this is all going? What's the next 2 years? Since we're entering a new political administration, where's the next 4 years going with China?
Wow, I don't see it getting better. Because, you know, 80-some% of our infrastructure is in the private sector. The private sector's got to wake up and say it's not all about the money. Okay, I mean, I was on a call Friday with a guy with a major company, actually cyber company in this country, who he and a few of his counterparts in some other companies are really trying to make an effort to fight back. And they've had, they've got some leadership that's willing to forego the Chinese market, if you will. Unfortunately, the majority, of our businesses don't want to forego that Chinese market, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
I mean, particularly Hollywood, right? I mean,
or the NBA.
When they put out a picture, yeah, or the NBA, you get something comes out that they don't like, then they're willing to change it because they don't want to upset the Chinese because of the marketplace, you know. And I say, well, then go live there. If that's what you like and that's right. what you want, then go live there. Okay. But don't destroy what we have here because of what you think is, going to make you money. We just have to keep fighting at the awareness angle. We just have to get better at shoring up our defenses. And get better offensive, mm-hmm. if you will. This is a little bit of a spinoff, but I saw something came out in the paper where some people from the incoming administration had questioned why we really need a space force. You know, couldn't that money be diverted toward the domestic side? Okay. Well, you know, the Chinese are up there now mapping the dark side of the moon. Okay. And their goal is to have, a presence up there. Well, you know, everything I learned in the military is he who has the high ground
right.
commands, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if they have that and all the satellites and everything that are below that between us? Okay. They now control.
Yep. I think the biggest problem with Space Force is the name. They should have had a better name. That may have made it more palatable.
I agree on that. No, we just got to keep fighting, Darren. I mean, even though that, we fought a good fight when we were in, we can't give up. I mean, particularly folks like us that know what we know, we've got to keep getting the message out there that the Communist Party in China is an adversary. There's no two ways about it.
Yep.
Okay. The PPE, they controlled all the personal protective equipment when this thing first started. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I was involved in trying to help some people get some of that stuff. And that's where it was coming from. If you wanted it, okay, and you had to pay their price to get that, right?
Yep.
Think about that. If they can control any market, okay, that you're dependent on, okay, then they're going to hold you hostage to that. So I think we got to bring manufacturing back here, okay, particularly like in our medicines. We got to produce that stuff here. Otherwise, if we're dependent on somebody else, then that's a weakness.
So
the dependency that we can't.
So I'm going to leave you with this last point. This will be a quick one. So you're in Charlotte. I'm going to assume NASCAR is not beholden to China yet. Are they? Are they holding firm?
I hope not.
Okay. All right. I say that because Gary, when he left the bureau for a little while, he was the head of security for NASCAR, and so that was And we used to the best Christmas dinner I always had was at the Speedway Club. Are they still open, or have they closed because of COVID?
Yeah, they've. No, they've been open. It's just, you know, it's like everything else, restaurant-wise, it's, you know, limited seating and stuff like that. Friday night we went into the new lockdown now. We can't, from 10 o'clock at night till, 5 in the morning, unless you're going out for something.
because COVID's urgent. Most active during those hours. Is that the science behind it?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
Like I haven't heard. Have you heard of anybody that caught COVID on an airplane?
No, I haven't.
I haven't.
No. Nope.
And I've traveled.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I feel safer on that airplane than
yeah,
I feel in some places around here. You know, but I think if you there's a good point. We could get into it in another time on another discussion, Darren. But is like, look at the impact that COVID has caused economically. I mean, when this is over, you're going to have a ton of small businesses are going to be totally destroyed and out of business. Many of them in the restaurant bar area. And so look at that and go, wow, I see what's happened here. What scares me the most is bad actors around the world have seen what this disease caused. And now bioterrorism is, I think, the door's been open. People have been awakened. And, you know, look at what I can cause, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
If I choose to do so.
All right. Well, Gary, I appreciate you coming on. Good discussion. Wish your family a Merry Christmas for me, and we'll stay in touch, and we'll look for Gary's stuff on LinkedIn.
You and yours.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Listen, take care. Be safe, and Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thanks. Same to you. So I want to thank you again for taking the time to download and listen to the Cyber Guy podcast. I really appreciate it. If you have thoughts or comments on topics you'd like to hear in the future, feel free to email me at Darren@thecyberguy.com. Cyber is spelled C-Y-B-U-R. And if you have questions of a cyber perspective that you'd like me to try and answer personally to you, I'm happy to do that as well. You can find me on LinkedIn, Darren Mott, D-A-R-R-E-N-M-O-T-T. It's not hard. You'll see my picture. You'll see the logo for the podcast. Make sure you download this podcast. Tell your friends. Give a review if you're so inclined. As you go through your week, make sure you understand the threats that are targeting you. You assess the risks those threats pose to you and proceed wisely online. Thanks. Have a good week.